A recent study came out that found plastics in carotid plaques of patients, and the internet went bananas. Today, we're going to talk all about that article and talk about what the article actually shows, what it doesn't show when it comes to plastics and heart disease. So let's get started. Thanks so much for stopping by. This is the Building Lifelong Athletes podcast. My name is Jordan Reneke. If we haven't met yet, I'm a double board certified family physician and sports medicine physician. And the goal of this podcast is to help keep you active and healthy for life through actionable, evidence-informed education. And today we're talking about a recent article that came out all about microplastics and nanoplastics and cardiovascular events. The title of this is Microplastics and Nanoplastics in Atheromas and Cardiovascular Events. That's a mouthful. And this was published by Marfella et al. In the New England Journal of Medicine. So that's a pretty big journal until a lot of people went bananas, right? So this is a big thing in the New England Journal. So I figured, hey, this is a good time to kind of take a little bit of break and talk about it. So let's do a little background first. So first of all, plastics. Everyone knows what plastics are, right? Plastics are everywhere. In the shot alone, my glasses, in the background, there's plastics literally everywhere. And they're not going to go anywhere, right? Because our life is pretty much built on plastics now. We are always using them, whether we're eating out of them, drinking out of them, just lots and lots of plastics everywhere it's happening. And the current production of plastics is predicted to continue to be the same here until about 2050. So once again, not going anywhere anytime soon. And when plastics, when they're released into nature, they break down, right? So they don't just sit there forever. You might see a bunch of plastic bags or plastic water bottles or whatever, and they don't seem like they're breaking down, but they do. Slowly over time, they break down. And when they do, they kind of get smaller and smaller. And in this article, they talked about a couple different classifications of plastics, specifically microplastics and nanoplastics. Microplastics are those less than 5 millimeters, so small. And then nanoplastics are way smaller, so less than 1,000 nanometers. So very, very tiny. So nanos, obviously very small, and whereas micros, just kind of small. And these can get into your body via multiple mechanisms, whether that's inhalation, so you know breathing them in, ingestion, eating it, or even skin exposure. So like things like emollients or lotions or creams or sunscreen, all that stuff, so they can be there and it can get in the body. And there's been lots of data showing you can find plastics in multiple organs throughout the body, in the bloodstream, even in breast milk, crossing over to babies. So there's lots of stuff. And the reason we care so much is because it's thought that micro and nanoplastics can produce things like oxidative stress, which is kind of stressing the cells, inflammation, and early apoptosis or cell death. So potentially can lead to lots of bad things. You know, this is not as much in terms of have long-term data on any of this, but we have seen in smaller studies and rat models and whatnot and petri dish studies that these micro and nanoplastics tend to produce this oxidative stress, inflammation, all these bad things. And this could really be problematic in endothelial cells, right? So the endothelial cells are a certain type of cell. They kind of line things, specifically the blood vessels in our heart, the small vessels of our heart. And so if we have endothelial dysfunction in the heart, that's no good. That can lead to potentially the building of a plaque and a heart attack. So that's why we care about it so much. And although we have all this early preliminary data, the clinical significance of plastics in the body is really unknown. It's really kind of speculative. And so this study, the whole goal of this was to explore whether or not these microplastics are detectable within the atherosclerotic plaques and whether the burden of the microplastics is associated with cardiovascular disease. So, hey, can you see these in atherosclerotic plaques and is it associated with cardiovascular disease? And how do they do this? Well, first of all, this was a prospective multicenter observational study. So prospective meaning looking forward, multicenter meaning happened at multiple spots, not just one spot. Specifically, they did this because it would take a really, really long time to collect all the patients that they needed for this. So prospective going forward, multi-center, multiple sites, and observational, meaning, hey, we're just going to look and see what happens, right? We're going to go for it there. There is no intervention here, meaning, hey, we're going to group these people specific off this. It's not blinded. It's just observational. And essentially, they were divided into two groups. So essentially, they had those who found to have those microplastics in the carotid plaques or not. And the participants who were selected for this, they were known to have plaques already, right? So they're kind of screened and they're found to have this. They had to be without symptoms though. So they were asymptomatic patients. And the reason they chose this is that if patients were asymptomatic, they'd have a better chance of living longer and being available for follow-up. That was their general idea. And these patients had greater than 70% stenosis in the carotid. So your carotid arteries in your neck, it is one of the signs that if you have, you know, atherosclerosis there, then you have cardiovascular disease, it's presumed, and we treat it as such. And these people all had greater than 70% stenosis. So already a pretty advanced level of stenosis in the carotid. We'll just keep that in the back of our brain, but they were asymptomatic. And then these patients underwent a carotid endarterectomy, which is essentially going in there and cleaning out, roto-rooting more or less. It's one of the coolest surgeries I've ever seen when I was on vascular, seeing that you just see someone's neck split open. You're just like, oh my gosh. So really cool for our vascular surgeons out there who do that. But all these patients underwent that procedure. And then they were monitored to follow the incidence of non-fatal heart attack, non-fatal stroke, and death from any cause. And what they tried to do, they tried to adjust this all this data for things like age, sex, BMI, total cholesterol, HDL, LDL, triglycerides, creatinine levels, diabetes, hypertension, and previous cardiovascular events. So a bunch of big things, right? We're kind of looking at that and saying, hey, can we take away all these other known risk factors? And they're trying to equate for that. So we'll talk more about that later, but that's what they're doing. And they kind of used initially an electron microscope to kind of look for the plaque, meaning, hey, do they see plaque inside of, or I'm sorry, to look for these plastics inside of the plaque. So if you see here, looking at the picture that I'm gonna throw up here, they use this electron microscope, which gets incredibly detailed pictures at a very, very, very small level. And you can see that kind of these jagged pieces, and these jagged pieces specifically are what we're looking at for the microplastics inside there, which is kind of crazy. So yep, plastic can get in there. Definitely confirmed by that. For the results of this, there were 257 patients total, and they had a 33-month follow-up, so a little over 2.5 years, not too bad. And what they found was that 58% of plaques had some sort of microplastics in them. And just a couple things they found is those who had the plaques with microplastics were younger, tend more likely to be a man, less likely to have hypertension, more likely to have diabetes, more likely to have cardiovascular disease, abnormal lipids, and more likely to smoke. He looked at this in terms of geography too, and didn't seem to see a difference between geographic locations, which I think it's a cool thing they check for, because it's like, oh, what if everybody who had it lived in an urban center exposed to lots of things, and that didn't seem the case. And they also measured inflammatory markers like IL-18, IL-1B, IL-6, TNF-alpha. Those are, like I said, super nerdy, but at the end of the day, those are just different markers of inflammation, and looked at those. And there was a link between how much plastic was present and increased inflammatory markers, meaning the more plastic that was present, you probably had increased inflammatory markers as well. And what they're looking at here for the primary endpoints, what they found was that non-fatal heart attack or non-fatal stroke or death from any cause, there were 7.5% of people in the group with no microplastics had one of those events, whereas 20% in the group that had microplastics had that. So that's just straight up like comparing no other statistical analyses. It's, you know, a 2.84 hazard ratio, meaning the group with the plastics was 2.84 times more likely to have that primary endpoint. And if we kind of look at it here, there's, I think, a cool chart here looking at the hazard ratios, and it's an additional chart. And you can see here, we're looking at patients. What this is looking at here is their primary endpoints on the left side or the y-axis here. And what we're looking at on the right side is months since enrollment. So essentially, as we go through more months, we will see an increase in primary endpoints. So we're having more of those. And the yellow line is specifically looking at the group who had the microplastics, whereas the blue is those without. And you can see a stark difference there. And what was kind of very interesting is, you know, initially we had about a 2.84% or 2.8 times increase. Well, when they adjusted for different things, when they really adjusted for the age, sex, BMI, cholesterol, creatinine, diabetes, hypertension, all those things, the hazard ratio got even higher, and it was 4.5. So essentially 4.5 times increased risk in those who had the plastics versus those who didn't. So they did seem to have an increased risk of having some sort of significant event for those who had the plastics or not. And so when you hear that, people went bananas, right? Said, oh, like plastics, we need to get rid of everything. We shouldn't pump the brakes just for a second, right? So first things first, this is an observational study. And what we know from an observational study is that it cannot prove causality. We just have to remember that. What does causality mean? Well, causality means, hey, we can pretty confidently say this thing causes that. And you just can't do that in an observational study. We can do that in randomized controlled trials and interventional studies where we say, hey, we have a placebo group and we change this one variable and then we check the outcomes, right? And we follow that along. So a prospective interventional trial can potentially do that. We can't do that with an observational study. So first things first, we cannot prove causality with this. That being said, this is how we start. This is how science works. You start and you see this and say, oh shoot. You know, I think ethically it'll be challenging to do a randomized controlled trial with this, meaning, hey, we're going to feed you plastic to this group and not plastic to this group. Ethically, that will be challenging and probably hard to get past an IRB board, but I'm not going to talk about that. But that being said, we can't prove causality from this thing. So that's just the one first thing. You know, people are going to say like plastics cause this. We don't know that. We don't know that from this. And the number one question I had when reading this is like, oh, are the patients who had plastics, like, are they just more unhealthy? Obviously, they try to account for lots of things, right? They look for age and BMI and sex and dyslipidemia, all those things. But is it possible that they're just more unhealthy in general? You know, do they eat more food that comes wrapped in plastic, so therefore they have more exposure to plastics? So is it that they eat food that is more highly processed, they have lots of plastic exposed to them, they have higher exposure to plastics, so that's why they have more plastics? Is the plastic causing the heart disease risk, or the other things that also associate with increased plastic intake also causing? I don't know. It's very hard to tell. And we don't know where the source of plastic came from, right? Is it from drinking water? Is it from the food they ate? Not necessarily sure. Also, maybe there was some contamination possibly. You know, they didn't use necessarily a clean room. That's probably stretching a little bit, but they did mention that in the article. Also, they did not take into account socioeconomic status. They did talk about geography, but they did not talk about socioeconomic status, which really matters, right? So we've known time and time again, people in lower socioeconomic status tend to have poor health outcomes. And so the question is, are these people from that, you know, who had the plastic, you have a lower socioeconomic status and therefore exposed to something else? They also didn't look at diet, like I mentioned, what they're eating in general. And yeah, that's very important, obviously, what we're ingesting, and doesn't talk about what products they use, all these different things. We have no idea. And on top of that, this population specifically had greater than 70% carotid stenosis. So by definition, that's a pretty advanced atherosclerotic lesion that usually has to have an intervention. You know, it's significant enough for them to have an intervention. So this may not be generalizable to the vast majority of people. This may not be, you know, what's going on. Maybe it takes a certain amount of cardiovascular disease before we start to really see effects on anything, and then the plastics matter. We don't know. So the long story short behind all of this is that really cool article. My take-home points is that I think it's a really, really cool article. I'm super glad they did this. This is what we need. We need to understand, you know, the exposures we have. And I think environmental exposures and toxins are kind of a buzzword for sure. Toxins is everything's a toxin. You know, everything is a toxin depending on the dose. But it's cool to see that, hey, maybe there's something more to this. And this is kind of like the stepping stone for doing that. And so here's what I take from this. You know, you can take from this what you want, meaning, hey, I'm going to avoid all plastics at all costs. You know, I think that's understandable. I think if you see this and say, hey, there's plastics in there, I want to avoid it, that's cool. But it's just everything, just doing this not in a setting of neuroses, right? Not to where it's going to cause you, you know, difficulty sleeping because you're worried about microplastic exposure. I mean, this is the world we live in. And so we have to accept that, say, hey, this is what it is. What can I change? Maybe we go from a plastic water bottle to like a stainless steel water bottle. Cool. I think that's a reasonable thing. Maybe when you go to the grocery store, you bring your own bags and you don't expose them to plastics. I think that's great as well. Understand, hey, maybe we're using filtered water, not bottled water, but filtered water. There's little small tweaks that I think are very reasonable to do. And overall, this has been something I've think about quite a bit as well, just thinking about environmental exposures. Previously, back on the testosterone season, we talked about endocrine disruptors and how that could affect testosterone potentially. So there's little signals there, right? So we're kind of picking up a signal here and a signal there. And when enough signals are kind of popping, it kind of, you know, for me at least, it draws my attention. So, okay, maybe there's something to this. This isn't something where I'm going to completely throw everything plastic in my entire life, because that's not practical, right? The things that we have and how we live life. But being very conscious of the things that I ingest, maybe, and the things I purchase, and just kind of understanding, hey, that there might be some down the line effects. And it's really just kind of controlling risk factors, right? If this is a risk factor, which we're not sure of, but it seems like, hey, might be related, it's a possible risk factor, then it's reasonable to try to diminish or decrease our risk to that exposure. Do I know what the yield on that is? No. And so one of those things where like, hey, Jordan, like, is this like the biggest thing? Like, no, it's not, just because the data is not robust enough. It's enough where it's gotten me thinking, but I'm not going to do this at the sacrifice of sleep or a health promoting diet or exercise or anything like that. So it's up there in terms of, hey, I think it's cool and important, but not one of the big rocks yet, just based on the data that I've seen. So I never want anything that we find online to cause us even more anxiety, right? It's never ideal, because we can either control it and do what we can do, and we can control what we do, right? All we can control is what we can control. So limiting your exposure as you're able to, and kind of going from there. Just understanding, hey, life is very imperfect, and sometimes we're exposed to things we don't want to be, and we try to do our best, and that's it. And the cards that have been dealt, the cards we have been dealt, we can try to change as much as we can, but to me, it's one of those ones where we got a major and the major, and then this is one of those things that, hey, if we're locked in, we got all the big rocks checked, yeah, absolutely, this should be something we can consider. But, you know, if someone who's just, you know, grossly has a abnormal body composition and gets no sleep and never exercises, and then he's like, well, I'm not going to use plastic bags in the grocery store, I'm not going to say bad. That's great. Fantastic. But like, we have way bigger rocks that I know are going to make an improvement in your life. That's the biggest thing. I know it's going to make an improvement. Here, I'm not quite sure on that yet. So something cool to think about, one of those kind of smaller things. People will make, you know, a mountain of a molehill. They say, this is the biggest thing. And at the end of the day, it's boring what I preach, right? It's boring to like, hey, like, how's your diet? How's your sleep? How's your exercise? How's your mental health? Are you out with people? Are you in community? All these things, like really boring things. Like I'm a boring dude, and so those are boring things. But I do want to just really drive home the point of focus on the things we can control, the big things. And if those aren't locked in, get those locked in first. And then if you're really like, hey man, I want to dive into this. Cool. More power to you. I'm here to support you. And that's why I bring these podcasts saying, hey, these are things to consider, but I don't want these consuming you, taking over your life or taking a priority over like any of the necessary nine that I've already talked about. So that's going to be it for today. Hopefully this was helpful, kind of cool article. And hopefully you like these breaks from the seasons, just to kind of get some more cultural stuff to the more, you know, relevant and timely articles. If you enjoy this, let me know. And I can do more of these. I don't mind taking mid-season breaks or anything like that potentially, but yeah, let me know what you want to hear. But thanks so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it. Now get off your phone, get outside, have a great rest of your day. We'll see you next time. Disclaimer, this podcast is for entertainment, education, and informational purposes only. The topics discussed should not solely be used to diagnose, treat, or prevent any condition. The information presented here was created with an evidence-based approach, but please keep in mind that science is always changing, and at the time of listening to this, there may be some new data that makes this information incomplete or inaccurate. Always seek the advice of your personal physician or qualified healthcare provider for questions regarding any medical condition.